Demand Judge Shaw Injury Law 732-888-888-888. Demand Judge. Demand Justice. Demand Judge. The injury accident professionals. First class service. Judge gets it done. Maximum compensations are goal. See JudgeShawInjuryLaw.com. Demand Judge Shaw Injury Law 732-888-888. Demand Judge.
Welcome to Hook, Line, and Splitter, a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast. And now, here's your host, Greg Giamborisi.
Good day, everybody. Welcome back to Hook, Line, and Splitter, a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast. This is episode 79, the final episode in which we wrap up the 2023 Blue Claws season. I'm Greg Giamborisi, Hook, Line, and Splitter. Is presented by Judge Shaw Injury Law. We understand the toll injuries take on families, and we're here to help. For a free consultation, call 1-866-909-6894 or visit JudgeShawInjuryLaw.com. That's Judd with two Ds, ShawInjuryLaw.com. I'm Greg Giamborisi, and we wrap up 2023 today with Tony Graham, who did the games with me this year on Bally Live, MILB TV, and BlueClaws.com. Blue Claws, a great year, made the playoffs. Literally the last at bat of the top of the ninth inning in the regular season, tied the game 1-11, made the playoffs where they had a great win. Caleb Briggett's a two-run homer to win a game one of the SAL Northern Division Championship Series against Hudson Valley, but the Blue Claws would lose game two and game three. Game three, an excruciating defeat, 3-2 up in Hudson Valley last Friday night, and that's how the Renegades moved on to the SAL Championship Series where they lost 2-0 to the Red Sox affiliate, the Greenville Drive. But it was still a tremendous season for the Blue Claws, and we wrap it all up here today. We'll have more episodes, and we'll keep going, of course, with this podcast, but this will really be the wrap-up of the 2023 season. So Tony and I did about an hour together, and you know, we went over the whole season, touched on a lot of different players, and you know, I think it serves as a good recap for the year for you guys, and we even touched on some guys that could be here next year. Arizona Fall League rosters were announced the day we did this as well. We taped this on Friday the 22nd at about noon. And later that day, later Friday afternoon, Orion Kirkering, who spent some time with the Blue Claws this year, a couple of months, was promoted to the Phillies. And he'll be the first player ever to play for the Blue Claws and the Phillies in the same season. Non-rehab. So pretty incredible story. And he'll pitch at five levels this year. Low A, Clearwater, High A, Jersey Shore, Double A, Reading, and he made one appearance for Triple A, Lehigh Valley. So we talk about Kirkering and his season, but we don't mention that he got called up. That's because we taped this literally 2 hours before the news broke that that he was getting called up. But I think you'll like it. It's a good episode, and we thank you for being a part of Hook, Line, and Splitter. Lightstar Energy Group is a leading energy brokerage firm headquartered in New Jersey. Our goal is to provide clients with premium energy management services to lower electricity and natural gas costs and to provide a long-term energy management strategy. We pride ourselves in bringing each and every individual business the same benefits of deregulation enjoyed by universities, municipalities, and all high-volume energy users. Tailored products and contracts, lower cost, personal attention, and outstanding service. 732-722-5880 or to learn more about Lightstar Energy Group today. So this is episode 79, Hook, Line, and Splitter, with Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast, our 2023 wrap-up with Blue Claws broadcasters Greg Giamborisi and Tony Graham. Enjoy, and thanks so much for listening to Hook, Line, and Splitter, a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast. Hi, atop Shoretown Ballpark here in Lakewood. I'm Greg Giamborisi alongside Tony Graham. This is Hook, Line, and Splitter, a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast, wrapping up the 2023 Jersey Shore Blue Claws season. Tony, welcome back. Great to see you again. Unfortunately, we're going to wrap up with a postseason defeat. We'll start there, but great to see you again. Welcome back.
It's always great to be here, Greg. Right now we're looking out on a beautiful but empty ballpark, the wind blowing in anticipation of a nor'easter roaring up.
Or anticipation of 28 weeks from today, or April that. 5th, opening night against Aberdeen.
Where it's 50-50 whether the weather will be better. It is rather warmish today, but as I said, the wind really blowing in from center and right. It wouldn't be a good day for the pitchers. You know, last weekend was sort of nostalgic. Greg got up on Sunday and, you know, force of habit, I wanted to come over here for a game, which would have been game one of the best of three championship series. And I sort of instinctively looked toward my phone, waiting for you to text me lineups.
Yeah.
That would not come. And, it was an interesting season for sure, and very dramatic season in many aspects. It was a disappointing ending, but a season that certainly had its highlights.
When I drove up to Hudson Valley to do the game on Thursday, the 14th, game two, Blue Claws had one of the more dramatic wins of the season on September 12th in game one of that series against Hudson Valley. When I drove up there, it never occurred to me that we wouldn't be sitting in this booth on Sunday for game one of the championship series. You know, the Blue Claws had won 9 out of 12 against Hudson Valley in August and September, not including the playoff game. So they had won 10 out of 13 against the Renegades going into that game Thursday. They needed one of two on Thursday and Friday. They ended up losing both. So, you know, we'll start there in game two, you know, the way it ended. And it was, it was a good game. The Blue Claws did very well to keep it at a 3-1 game, and then they would cut it to 3-2. But like so many of these playoff games, you know, they had a couple of chances themselves that they didn't take advantage of. And the biggest one came in the eighth inning when they had the bases loaded and one out and two on and nobody out. And, you know, and didn't get it done. And, you know, they fall 3-2 in a great playoff game, but it wasn't meant to be.
Greg, in that game three, the manager of Hudson Valley really made the move of the playoffs.
Yeah, Sergio Santos.
Blue Claws had second and third, right, with one out, down 3-2. They intentionally walk Felix Reyes to load the bases. So bases loaded, one out, down 3-2, and they bring in a left-hander from the pen, Jeffrey Gilbert, who was making, at that moment, his high A debut. He had spent the whole season in Tampa, had a very good year.
Yep.
So they bring him in to face Leandro Pineda, a left-hand batter, left-hand pitcher, bases loaded, one out. He strikes him out, and then up comes Anthony Kieran, who's a low average hitter but does have some pop and who bats from the right side, and he strikes him out, and there goes the threat, and then he gets the Blue Claws 1-2-3 in the ninth inning. And look at
they had lost the game in the eighth inning.
Yeah, yep. That was the game. And then Gilbert actually, Hudson Valley goes on to lose two straight to Greenville in the finals, and Gilbert only pitches one inning.
Yep.
The game was over, game two was over really by the time he comes in and pitches an inconsequential scoreless inning as it turns out. But that was the move that really doomed the Blue Claws, or the fact that the Blue Claws could not get that one more clutch hit in the top of the eighth inning there with the bases loaded.
Yeah, and Jack Dallas had pitched a great game. He retired all 9 batters that he faced. And, you know, it just Jason Ruffcorn threw a scoreless bottom of the eighth, but they just fell one hit shy.
Greg, and in the playoffs, you know, Kendall Simmons never played, a guy who is injury-prone all season, as it turned out. And he played 50 games for the Blue Claws. He had 8 home runs. They could have used his right-hand bat. Lefty Sam Aldegari, who is one of their more dependable pitchers down the last couple of weeks, he was shut down. And then Andrew Walling, one of their two really aces out of the bullpen the last couple of weeks, he was unavailable for the final game had he been needed. So there were just a couple of circumstances that lined up against Jersey Shore going into the playoffs there with Hudson Valley.
Yeah, so, you know.
One more thing.
Okay.
Can I mention this? A couple of numbers. Ran the numbers here. In the three games, granted it's only 3 games, Blue Claws were 18 for 94. That's a 191 batting average. And 4 for 25 with runners in scoring position.
In the three-game series, they scored 6 runs.
The ERA, now we're looking at 3 games, wasn't bad. It was 3.60, which is not great, but it's good enough if you score some runs.
I feel like a lot of that was
to win. Yeah.
The game, too, got out of hand a little bit late. You know, it didn't even matter at that point. But, yeah, I mean, look, when they needed 3 runs on Friday, they got 2. And that's it. So it is what it is. Their last 2 games here at this ballpark were 2 of the more dramatic wins in not only the season, in years.
Oh, in history, really.
For the Blue Claws. Yeah, probably. to hit a go-ahead home run in the bottom of the eighth inning of a playoff game, which is what Caleb Ricketts did with his team losing 1-0 with one out in the eighth inning on September 12th in game one of that best of three with Hudson Valley. You know, that's one of the biggest home runs in club history, right? It's got to be.
Absolutely.
Sebastian Valle hit that home run with the Blue Claws scoreless against Greenville in 2010. Ironically, if you remember, in the Asbury Park Press fifth inning of that championship series in game four against Greenville in 2010. But at the time, it was it was scoreless.
First time in 10 years that the Blue Claws scored in the Asbury Park Press fifth inning.
But the game was scoreless at the time, and Tony was on the air with me at the time when he was the beat writer for the Asbury Park Press, hence the Asbury Park Press fifth inning. But it was scoreless at the time, and it was only the fifth inning. So, Ricketts' home run was bigger than that.
Right.
It just didn't win a championship. It just won a playoff game. I'm sure there are others that I'm missing off the top of my head, but not in a postseason game for sure.
In a regular season game.
Well, I guess besides they did hit those three home runs in a row against Lexington to tie the game.
Okay. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
But they just tied it with those home runs. Right. That was in the SAL Championship Series in 2016, 18.
Yeah. As far as regular season goes, for myself, I'd be hard-pressed to find a more dramatic, when you take the circumstances into context, the dramatic home run than the Felix Reyes walk-off against Aberdeen in the final game of the regular season, which really saved
here.
Yeah,
the final game here.
Walk-off, here. And, Blue Claws trailing going into that game, they desperately needed a win to try to keep pace with Brooklyn.
Well,
and
not only that.
And he hits the walk-off three-run
home
run.
Not only that.
I could still see that sailing way out onto the concourse in left field. What a shot.
We'll take it a step further than that because that was a Sunday afternoon.
Right.
Friday night, they had a three-run lead in the ninth inning and lost. Saturday night, they had a five-run lead with two out in the ninth inning and lost.
Right.
And then Sunday, they were losing basically the whole game or much of the game. They gave up a go-ahead home run to a very, very light-hitting middle infielder, Arison Plasencia, for Aberdeen. And then they gave up a couple of runs later to fall behind. They're down by three going into the ninth inning. I think it was 9-6. And
oh, go ahead.
Well, yeah. Well, they're losing going into the – it wasn't 9-6.
No.
It was
I think they were losing – was it 5-2?
No, they won 7-6. So they were down 6-3.
6-3, right.
And then they scored one run, and then Reyes hit the three-run walk-off right down the left field line to win the game. It's the first walk-off home run the Blue Claws hit in 4 years. Ben Pelletier hit one off of future MLB All-Star Felix Bautista of then – Orioles affiliate, or still Orioles affiliate, but when the Blue Claws were low A, Delmarva. That home run, because the Blue Claws had gone from one up to one back of Brooklyn in those 2 days, Friday night, Saturday night, and Brooklyn was going to play later that night. And had the Blue Claws lost that game and Brooklyn won, Jersey Shore would have been two out with six to play, and that might have been a bridge too far.
Yeah.
As it turned out, if everything else held form, it would have been a bridge too far for them to climb. But, I mean, that home run, it was a good crowd that day on the Sunday. They stuck around. They were into the game. Place went nuts. Team went nuts. And you could just kind of feel it was a big relief for them.
Yeah.
Kind of loosened them up. And they got lucky that night. Brooklyn played a back-and-forth game with Greenville that Greenville won. So instead of instead of staring at two out with six to play, they were tied with six to play with the tiebreaker. And obviously they came down to the very end. Literally the very last inning, but they got through it. So you want to go there first? How they got in? Because how they got in is really an all-time game in Blue Claws history. The game on September the 10th at Hudson Valley.
Oh, go ahead.
So that was the game. First of all, the Blue Claws played a doubleheader on Saturday the 9th because they had gotten rained out Friday. And they were a half game out going into the doubleheader, but they still controlled their destiny because they had the tiebreaker over Brooklyn.
Right.
But then they went out in the first game against Cam Schlittler of Hudson Valley. He faced Mitch Noonborn, and they would square off in game two of the division series a week later. But Schlittler beat Noonborn 2-0, and there went the Blue Claws' control.
Right.
So now they're a game back of Brooklyn going into the – both teams played a night game. And they both won. The Blue Claws won 8-5, and Brooklyn had won. Their game finished earlier. And if the Blue Claws had not won that game, and it got a little testy there for a few minutes, if the Blue Claws had not won that game, that was it. They were going to be eliminated that night. And then they go to Sunday, and then Sunday was really just a fun day. And if this was a major league pennant race or whatever, you would have been flipping back and forth.
Right.
The two channels would have been doing cut-ins on each broadcast. I mean, it was really amazing because the Blue Claws needed a win and a loss by Brooklyn, and Blue Claws fell behind. And Brooklyn was down 1-0. They tied it, and then they took the lead. So Brooklyn's game's going into the eighth inning, and it's going at a much faster pace than the Blue Claws game, which is in the sixth inning. And the Blue Claws scored 5 runs on the top of the sixth to take a 7-4 lead. As soon as they did that, Brooklyn gave up 5 runs in the eighth inning to fall behind 6-2. And it looked like they were over. And obviously, they didn't have a lot of time left. So at that point, you're thinking, all right, it's over. There's no way the Blue Claws are going to lose this lead, right? They did. They gave up a couple of runs. They gave up another unlikely home run, which might have been more unlikely than the Arison Plasencia home run that almost knocked them out the Sunday prior against Aberdeen. Kyle Battle, who was 2-for-31 in the season, hit one off of Carlos Betancourt. Actually, Betancourt gave up both of those. And ended up, and Betancourt had a great year, but he gave up those two homers. So Hudson Valley comes back and takes the lead. That was in the seventh. And I didn't think they were done yet, the Blue Claws.
Right.
But then in the bottom of the eighth inning, they get a run off of Jason Ruffcorn, who was phenomenal in this game. But they had a runner at third, 2 out. Hudson Valley did up a run.
Right.
And they get a run on what would have been the final out of the inning, strike 3 to end the inning. But Caleb Ricketts missed the ball. It was a pass ball. And it got back to the screen. The batter went to first, and the runner scored from third. At that point, I kind of thought that maybe this wasn't going to happen. And then Blue Claws are down by 2 with 2 out. They have runners at second and third. Leandro Pineda and Otto Kemp had gotten base hits. And Kemp, we'll talk about him a lot later on, and Pineda too. But huge hits. Felix Reyes, Eric Brito comes up.
Right. Two
and
outs,
hits the two out.
Second and third.
Right. Down 2. It's a bouncer to third. And Jesus Rodriguez, the third baseman for Hudson Valley, bobbled it, picked it up, and then threw it low, and it got by the first baseman. Both runs scored. Now, if the first baseman, Spencer Henson, who would have his moments against the Blue Claws later on in the series in the next week, if he had picked that, I don't know what would have happened. It was pretty darn close. Would they have called him safe? Would they have called him out? Well, if they called him out, the game would have been over because the second run wouldn't have scored, and the season would have been over. If they call him safe, then you would have had the top of the order. You would have had a Jared Carr up with runners at first and third, down by 1. Who knows what would have happened?
Yeah.
And it turned out that Henson didn't pick it, so it got by him, and that allowed the second run to score to tie the game. Okay, great. Ruffcorn gets out of a jam in the bottom of the ninth. Then it goes to the top. He got in the bottom of the ninth, they got to strike him out, throw him out, double play to help him get through that inning. Go to the 10th, Blue Claws don't score. Now I think they're in trouble again. Because, how can you not? The other team has a runner at second with nobody out to start the bottom of the 10th. And with one out, Jason Ruffcorn picked off the runner at second base, Gomez.
Unbelievable.
Which might have been the worst base running play I've ever seen in – because where's he going? He's not going to steal third. He's the catcher. He's not going to steal third. You have 2 chances to score on a bloop single. So, that was atrocious. But to Ruffcorn's credit, that was a great call. I asked him about it, and he said, who did you – was that called from the bench? And he said, normally it is. And he saw the call that they had relayed to Caleb or whatever, and Ricketts, who was catching, and Ricketts related to him, and they pick him off. So he said after the game, after the inning, I went up to Bull, Greg Brzezinski, the manager, and said, hey, great call on the pickoff. And he said, no, that was all Phil. Because usually Bull will call it. But he said that time it was Phil Condari, the pitching coach, who made that call, and they picked him up. So they got out of that inning, and then the Blue Claws got one of the gifts from the gods in baseball history that Hudson Valley decided to not to use any of their pitchers with the postseason, which made sense because they had the postseason. Yeah. I mean, Brooklyn must have been pulling their hair out. But they had their chances, too. And they brought in backup catcher Juan Crisp to pitch. And Blue Claws got one, but even that felt a little underwhelming, right?
Yeah, which didn't seem like it would be enough, really. You should get more off the backup.
Because really
catcher,
getting one is only holding serve. Because, again, Hudson Valley gets a runner at second in the bottom of the 11th, and that's when Otto Kemp stepped up and made one of the best plays and biggest plays in Blue Claws history. The grounder in the hole at third.
Right.
He makes a diving stop on, and he threw the runner out at first, and then Ruffcorn got the next two outs to end the game. If Kemp didn't make that play, it's first and third with, because he wouldn't have scored, but it would have been first and third with nobody out, winning run at first, tying run at third. And even though Hudson Valley had struggled to get runs in, they're probably going to get the tying run in from third, and you know who knows where you end up. And maybe they would have won the game. That would have been the winning run. Now, if the Blue Claws got to face Crisp again for a second inning, maybe they would have scored.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that play, you know, Kemp made a few unbelievable plays, and that was certainly one of them. So, I mean, it was a wild finish to the season. It just it didn't end exactly as they wanted. But it really was a great year. So, Tony, let's –
you know, Greg, you talked about the last couple of games and how the Blue Claws managed, of course, to get into the postseason. But none of that – would have happened had they not won the final three games of the Brooklyn series back in early August. So on August the 2nd, Brooklyn wins. It's during the six-game series. There's still three games to go, and Jersey Shore falls six games back at that point on August the 2nd. I remember we were still wondering or hoping that, you know, Blue Claws would do well in that series and have a shot for the postseason. So they fall six games back after that defeat. And you say to me, we're teetering. And I'm thinking to myself, I think we've already tottered.
Yeah.
They're six games back. And then Jersey Shore on August – that was the August 3rd game they lost, 6-3. Then on the 4th, 5th, and 6th, they win. Jersey Shore does 6-3, 3-0, and 6-0.
Well,
and all of a sudden, they close it within three games and go 22-11 the rest of the way.
They were five out going into that series,
right,
which started on the first Tuesday. And we said probably got to come out of here certainly no worse than five out.
Right.
And probably got to come out of here three out.
Right.
And then they lost two of the first three. So now the only way to come out of their three out is to win the last three games of that series and win the series 4-2. So going into the Friday, I remember saying it on the air with you. Like, well, if they can't hear five out, they still have a fighting chance, but it's going to be tough. But even that would require to win two out of three against a good team. And they had just added a couple of guys that week. Jet Williams, the shortstop.
The Jet.
Ryan Clifford. Yeah. The first baseman outfielder who they had just acquired in the trade from Houston for Justin Verlander the day before the series began. So,
and then Clifford hits a home run.
Yeah,
his first at bat
off Mitch Noonborn out of the grass berm in right. So that was it. They had to win those three games, and they did. And I think one of the lasting memories of this team will be every time their backs were to the wall, you know, they responded. And You don't talk about the first half all that much, you know, when you end up winning the second half and in the postseason, and obviously it's so long ago. You know, they were 2-8 to start the season and lost an excruciating game on opening day in Brooklyn. I mean, but remember, you know, the Blue Claws were 2-8 and they ended up playing a game against Hudson Valley here on Friday, June 9th, with 2 weeks left in the first half. And had they won that game, they lost in 10, but had they won that game, they would have been in first place. They were a half game out going into that game on Friday, June 9th. That was a tough loss, but you know, and then they lost. You know, that started a four-game skid, and then they were unable to get back into the first half race. And Hudson Valley was loaded. They had all these pitchers.
Yeah. That was a game they had Jared Carr at third with nobody at bottom of the ninth, tie game. If they win that game, then the Blue Claws take over first place. Kawhi never scores.
Yep.
And they lose in 10.
Yeah, that was the game where Tristan Garnett didn't cover first base, and then he threw the ball out of play, and time hadn't been granted, and two more runs scored. That was a whole mess. But, I mean, to be fair, that Hudson Valley first half team was the best team.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
I mean, they were better. They had, you know, four top-level starting pitchers at that point. all of whom finished the year promoted or traded. One of them got traded to the White Sox at the deadline, Juan Carella, and the other guys all got promoted and were really good. So, you know, there was no shame in not beating that Hudson Valley team in the first half, especially when you spotted them a bunch of games after a 2-8 start. Mm-hmm. And the Blue Claws were, I think, at one point, their largest deficit was 8.5 games. Then the second half, they just started in a bit of a rut. They had that road trip to they had a Brooklyn trip where they went 3-3, and then they came home to play Hudson Valley and lost 5 out of 6. And again, a lot of those pitchers were still there. And then they went south, went to Rome, lost a couple of games there, and then had just an ugly week in Winston-Salem, where they lost a game that they led by 3 runs in the 8th inning on a Tuesday night, and then the next afternoon lost a game they led by 4 runs in the 8th inning. And then the night after that, they're down 9-2 in the 3rd inning in Winston-Salem, end up losing 13-11. That's on Thursday, July 20th. They're 8 games out, and from that point on, they were 7-14, 8 games out, and from that point on, they went 31-14 to finish the season, and obviously made the playoffs, made up an 8-game deficit. It's not easy to make up an 8-game deficit. Greenville did it in the first half in the SAL South and ended up winning the title, but you know, I think that's certainly a hallmark of this team. You know, they would fight you all the way to the last out of the season. And the last out of every game, they had a bunch of walk-off wins. They were just a scrappy team, and it was a really fun team to watch and be around. You know, they gave it everything they had the whole way through.
Now I want to mention Bull here. I think he did a heck of a job. When you consider, and you know, this happens a lot at these levels that the players come and go, or promoted, added, sent back, whatever. But he virtually had to manage 2, maybe 3 different teams.
Yeah, there was 66 players played for the Blue Claws this year.
It was a team that started the year. Then they got a few guys from Caleb Ricketts, so one of them from, but then he was hurt most of the time, from Clearwater. And then Eric Brito came along from Clearwater. And then they were losing. As it turned out, they lost their 2 aces from the bullpen in Tommy McCollum and Orion Kirkering, excuse me, who joined the club and then were soon after promoted up to Redding. So then they start the second half, and they wind up losing Nick Ward, who had been a veteran mainstay. Mm-hmm. Later on in the second half, Rickson Wingrove,
Marcus Lee sang.
Wingrove's a slugger. Sanger was having a fine year in the outfield. He's promoted. And the Blue Claws get a whole influx of new players from Clearwater, so it's virtually a whole new team from almost from top to bottom, with some exceptions that took the field there for the final 3 or 4 weeks, maybe even less, final 2-3 weeks of the regular season. And you know, for any manager, that's a test. And the interesting thing, again, especially at this level, is the fine line between development and winning. And most of the time, the manager goes for the player development. Like, you'll see a player will have 3 hits in a game, right? Next game, he doesn't play because they have to use, or they want to use, a player who might be 0-for-10, but they want to get that player in the game. So it's so difficult to try to manage and develop players and win at the same time, especially when there's such an influx and exodus going on almost all at once. And Bull held the ship steady and kept everyone together, and they come on and they make the postseason, which is a heck of an accomplishment.
So let's talk about some of these position players. I will kind of do this in quasi-chronological order, meaning guys that were here at the beginning of the year and just touch on their seasons. And we'll start, I thought, with one of the really cool stories of the season, and that was Nick Ward, who mm-hmm. played in the Independent Frontier League for 2 years before signing with his hometown team, the Phillies. He went from the Frontier League to then playing for Adelaide over the winter, where he thrived, was one of the best players in the league. That's how he ended up signing with the Phillies in the first place, and was just had a fantastic season and a well-deserved promotion to Reading for him. Now he's going back to Adelaide for the winter. Anything to add on Nick?
Well, no, he was a stabilizing force.
Yeah, he was great.
As a veteran, as a 27-year-old, he's a guy that the young players could look up to, and he could be an example for them.
And he's a guy that every team should want, like that type of guy. Yeah. Guy every organization should want.
Especially at these levels.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Marcus Lee Sang had a really solid year. He got a cup of coffee here last year, hit 8 homers, stole 20 bases for the Blue Claws this season, played top-notch defense in center and in left, and finished the year in Reading, where I assume he will begin next year.
Yeah, I believe he was the Phillies, minor league player of the month in May? Or June? Was it May or June?
It was one of those months.
May. And he had, he had a very good season here. A little erratic because he tailed off after that great month of May, and then he picked it up again.
And then he picked it back up again.
And then was promoted to Reading.
The first guy to get promoted was Casey Martin, who had 280 and stole 16 bases in 52 games, which was a big uptick in production for him. He went to Reading, where he struggled a bit. I'm sure he'll be back there at the beginning of next year. Rickson Wingrove was here for much of the season, played 101 games. Only Jared Carr and Leandro Pineda played more. 15 homers for Rickson and added 63 ribbies as one of the big sluggers in the middle of the Blue Claws lineup. And it was a solid year. He was very streaky. He had a couple of walk-off hits for Jersey Shore. But, you know what you were getting from him. We saw him for much of last year, and it was a really good campaign for him. And I was happy for him that he gets to finish it in Double A.
Yeah, he had a tough time of it in his final couple of weeks here at Reading. But I imagine he would start there again next season.
Leandro Pineda is an interesting guy. He had a really solid finish to the season. He had over 300 in the last couple of months of the year. Finished at 243, which tells you he started pretty slow. But he was one of the younger guys. He was only 20 years old on opening day. He turned 21 in June. And by the end of the season, he was one of the Blue Claws' more trustworthy hitters at the plate for sure. He's got a beautiful lefty stroke. Can go foul line to foul line. A little pop. Still young and developing, and he's an interesting guy. I don't know where he will be at the beginning of next year. Will be interesting because, you could make a case that he's ready for Reading for sure, but he's also young. He would be at 21 on opening day. He'd be one of the younger players in Double A. So we'll see what they do with him. But I think he definitely made some progress over the season.
Yeah, he wound up at 243, which doesn't seem like a lot, but he was under 200 for couple of months there.
Yeah.
243, 9 homers, 67 ribbies, and since July 12th, he closed the season hitting 369, and he wound up playing in 107 games.
Yeah, led the team.
Yeah.
Jared Carr, 102 games, hit 235, 4 homers, but stole 23 bases, plays a tremendous outfield. He was a SportsCenter top play again for a catch that he made in April, robbing a home run on a Sunday afternoon back in April. He's actually been on SportsCenter's top 10 plays 3 times now in 2 years as a Blue Claw, which is almost unprecedented.
Talk about the catch he made in the playoffs.
Yes, so he saved the Blue Claws' bacon there in the postseason. As it turned out, they lost the game anyway, but he made a catch in the bottom of the fourth inning. Connor Ash was...
Go ahead.
No, Rafael Marcano was pitching. It was the last batter that Marcano faced. And they had a couple of guys on base and a 3-1 lead, a 2-1 lead at the time. And they had first and third, nobody out. And a ball was hit down the left field line into the corner. Carr's playing left field. He was not even in the original lineup that day, too. Right. And Carr sprinted after it into the left field corner, made a magnificent, fully extended diving backhand catch. It was a sac fly. But if he doesn't catch it, it's 3-1 with runners at second and third and nobody out. As it turned out, it was 3-1 with one out and a runner at first, and they got out of that inning, keeping it at 3-1. Now, they would lose 3-2, but that game could have easily been put out of reach in that inning if Carr hadn't made that great play. I know he went to Adelaide last year. I don't know if he's going back or not, but he was here for 2 years. I imagine he'll go to Reading next year. We wish him the best. Really nice guy.
Carr will be 24 on opening day, 25 in May, played in 102 games, 235, 11 homers, 37 ribbies, and 23 stolen bases. And, he's got to get a shot, I would think, at Reading.
Yeah.
An elite defender.
Elite.
With excellent speed.
Yep, no doubt.
That'll play, and it depends on whether the bat will continue to progress.
Hendrick Nava played 64 games as as a catcher and DH with the Blue Claws. He also pitched twice. And he came on a little bit, played better at the end of the year, switch hitter, and he'll go play winter ball somewhere as well. We could see him back with the Blue Claws next year. That covers basically the bulk of the guys that were here at the beginning of the season. I guess, Tony, with one exception, Hau-Yu Lee, right, who was here and got traded to the Tigers on trade deadline day, which was August the 1st.
And that's another key loss, too, as far as the Blue Claws roster is concerned. These things happen, of course, players get traded. But having said that, that's a key bat, a key defender that Blue Claws didn't have coming down.
And not only that, you know, he got here in August of 2022, and he never played better with the Blue Claws than he did really in the month leading into his trade to the Tigers for Michael Lorenzen. So,
by the way,
he got hurt. He was playing with West Michigan, the Tigers high A team, and only played 8 games there and got hurt and missed the rest of the season. But I'm sure he'll be back. He'll probably be in Double A Erie next year.
Yeah, by the way, Navit will be 22 next year at 221, 3 homers, 27 ribbies, played in 64 games, a switch hitter. You think he'll start here next year? I would think so. They got a couple of catchers at Clearwater too. I'll talk about them a little bit, but I would think he'll get a shot to start here next year.
One other guy from the beginning of the year was Kendall Simmons, who was injured at the beginning of the year and kind of had an on and off the IL season. When he played, he was good. Hit 267, 8 homers, an OPS of 856, which is very good. You know, obviously just unfortunate that he was on and off the IL, but when he played, he was good, and he'll go play winter ball somewhere, and then maybe he goes to Reading, maybe he just comes back here to get some more at-bats next year. We'll find out.
Yeah, he'll be 24 on April 11th, 267, 8 home runs, 37 ribbies in just 50 games. It's tantalizing to think what he could have done maybe in 100 games. He might have even been promoted at some point if he kept up that pace.
So then,
I hope he's here next year, but I wouldn't be surprised if he starts at Reading either.
So then there were some additions, of course, that the Blue Claws made throughout the course of the season. We're doing the position players now. The first wave came in June. Or really, the first one came in May with Caleb Ricketts, who came up in early May, played for a few weeks, got hurt, and then came back and played okay. You know, he finished at 218 with 3 homers in the regular season. He had the home run to win game 1 of the postseason. Actually, 2 of his 4 home runs were go-ahead home runs in the Blue Claws' last at bat. He hit one in Wilmington at the
Flair for the dramatic.
Yeah, on August 23rd as well for Caleb. So, you know, what they do with him, we'll see. And he'll either be here or in Reading. He's going to the Arizona Fall League this year, so if he plays well down there, that'll, I'm sure, give him a leg up and go into Reading. My guess is he'll be in Reading when the season starts next year. We'll touch on the Arizona Fall League representatives because there are a few from the Blue Claws. We'll talk about them at the end in bulk. Another one, though, is Gabriel Rincones Jr., who was here from June 13th on through to the end of the season. He had 238, 10 homers, and stole 8 bases with the Blue Claws. He stole 30-plus bases between here and Clearwater, where he began the year. His first taste of pro ball was 2023. He was drafted in the third round of 2022 and had a pretty solid campaign.
You played here 72 games, had tremendous power, especially the other way.
Yeah. And yeah, I want to say like 6 of his home runs were opposite field home runs. And he had about 4 or 5 opposite field home runs in this park, which is not easy to do either.
He'll be 23 on opening day, Greg. Where is he next?
He's in Reading, for sure. Yeah, he'll be in the Arizona Fall League as well. I do think he'll. I'm sure he probably lost a little sleep over his last at bat of the season, which was before that intentional walk in the game against Hudson Valley, Game 3. He came up with runners at first and second and nobody out and grounded out to the pitcher. Runners moved up to second and third. Then they had the walk. Then Gilbert came in, struck out the 2, and that was that. But he came in. He came up with Eric Brito, who is a fun player to watch. He's really fast. He's a magnificent defender. Hit 208, and I'm sure he'll be back. He'll be back here next year for the Blue Claws. By the end of the season, the Blue Claws defense was about as good as it gets in the minors between Brito and Brian Rincon and Otto Kemp. We'll get to them in a minute. But Brito, I'm sure, will be back here next year.
He's 21. He'll be 22 in May, 65 games this year. And if it's a Brito and Rincon as your middle infielders, that will be
you're not getting any
that
better.
That would be dynamic up the middle.
Back to the podcast in a second. Since 1986, Rich Green Lawns has been the leading lawn fertilization company of the Jersey Shore, providing lawn fertilization, bed weed control, tick and mosquito control, as well as tree and shrub programs. Mention this ad and save 50% off your first lawn application. Call or text us today at 732-370-5963, 732-370-5963, or richgreenlawns.com. And when shopping for appliances, electronics, and mattresses, you want a local hometown team that you can trust. That's PC Richard & Son. PC Richard & Son is a friendly and knowledgeable sales team, installations and repair service you can trust, and the guaranteed lowest prices. So get to PC Richard & Son today. Shop smart. Shop local. Shop PC Richard & Son. Otto Kemp came up early August and went 0 for his first 17 and then was really good after that. Remember, he got a hit in a day game to double up the gap in left center, and he gets the second and put his hands up like about time. Great guy. He's a player. He hits the ball hard to all fields. He's a magnificent defender. He played more third base than second base with the Blue Claws. He's got a, you know, he's got a third baseman's arm. And then also the Blue Claws between Brito and Rincon, you know, had second base locked down pretty much. So, you know, he played, especially once Rincon got here, he basically played exclusively third. But, you know, great guy. And he is a sensational defender. And he'll probably, I guess he'll get a chance maybe at Reading, but he could be back next year.
To start anyway. He'll be 24, Greg, on opening day. Won't be 25 till September. So
yeah, he was a nice find, undrafted free agent.
Absolutely.
That the Phillies got out of Point Loma Nazarene, a Division II school in Southern California.
He plays third base as well as anyone we've seen here.
Yes,
anyone.
100%. And the other thing was, I said this on the air the last game. Every time the Blue Claws were involved in something at the end of that season, it seemed, you know, he had his fingerprints on it. Be it a big hit to start a rally or a big hit as part of a big inning, as he did with a big single with one out in the two-run inning that extended the season in the last regular season game, or just making, you know, season-altering, season-saving defensive plays at third, as he did in the final game of the regular season as well. He's a guy that you definitely want in your organization.
Absolutely.
That was a great find by the Phillies. Then the big additions were Justin Crawford and Brian Rincon at the end of the year. They each played 18 games with Jersey Shore over the final 4 weeks. And then, obviously, in the postseason, Crawford had 288 with 7 steals. Rincon had 258 with 4 stolen bases. Both are top-notch defenders, Crawford in center, Rincon at short. Crawford more high profile, obviously, first-round pick from last year. But Rincon certainly impressed as well. They were the first two players born in 2004 ever to play for the Blue Claws. And in the case of Crawford and in the case of both of them, since 2021 when the Blue Claws became a high A affiliate, the only 19-year-olds that they've ever had were Hau-Yu Lee for a month last year and Andrew Painter for much of 2022 as well. So that's it, and you know they were key parts of this team by the end.
Crawford, the number 3 prospect in the Philly system, Rincon, a top 30 prospect. Both would just be, well, they were 19 this year, and both will be young 20-year-olds on opening day, April 5th in 2024. They'll be fun to watch. They will probably be here the whole year. They'll be fun to watch and see them develop.
I don't know that they'll necessarily be here the whole year, but
it depends.
Possible,
but
yeah. I would say if you're penciling in your 2023 Blue Claws lineup for April 5th, you can pretty much pencil Crawford in the center and Rincon in the short.
Absolutely.
Right now. But yeah, no, they're really exciting and fun. They were a lot of fun to watch defensively at the plate, speed on the bases, and the Phillies are certainly in good hands with them. You know, don't sleep on Rincon.
No.
Yeah, I think, you know, 14th round
switch hitter,
pick.
By the way.
Yes, he's a switch hitter. You know, I think you say Crawford and Rincon, you know, you default to Crawford, and Crawford's really good. Don't get me wrong, and he's going to be a player, and he's probably going to be a big leaguer. Rincon's really good.
Right.
That was another great find by the Phillies. So that covers basically the most notable of the position players.
Did we talk about Reyes?
Oh yeah, sorry. We should mention Felix Reyes, who I got to be honest, when he got here, I kind of said, I don't know why he's even here.
Right.
And he ended up with the biggest hit of the season.
Well, he only played 10 games in the regular season. He'll be 23 on opening day, 257, one big home run, and six big ribbies, and the sirens are wailing to celebrate Felix's big hit. And impressive background noise, you got to say that. Anyway, I think he'll be. I think he starts here next year.
Yeah. Whether he can play first or third, right. So wherever he plays, you know, that we'll see. But he can play first or third. I'm sure he'll be back at the beginning of the year. He was added to the roster when Justin Crawford was placed on the temporary inactive list back in late August for one weekend because his father was inducted into the Tampa Bay Rays Hall of Fame. So Justin went down for the induction, and they brought Reyes up, and I didn't really know why. Because obviously, you know, he's replacing an outfielder. He can't play the outfield. The Blue Claws were okay, you know, at the corner spots at that time, and it was only 3 days. And they ended up keeping him around. And how important did that turn out to be? Because
good thing they did.
They might not have been in the playoffs without him. And you know, the other thing was in the game they got eliminated in, at Game 3, he was the one who brought the bat. He was 3-for-3 in that game, and they intentionally walked him in his last at bat, which also proved to be, unfortunately for the Blue Claws, the right move. So, pitchers, there's a lot to cover here, so we'll kind of go as quick as we can. We'll start with the two starters that I guess were the two best starters the Blue Claws had for most of the beginning of the year, Matt Osterberg and Jordan Fowler, who Osterberg had a 3.61 ERA, Fowler a 3.73 ERA. Matt was promoted to Double-A Reading, and Fowler would have, but he hurt his back and missed the rest of the season. I assume he would have been in Double-A Reading, and they both, you know, very, very similar pitchers, and they both talked about how they enjoyed watching each other's starts, whoever got to pitch first in a specific series, because he would kind of give a blueprint to the second one about how to face a team. You know, they're not overpowering. They throw from kind of a not straight overhand arm slot, and, you know, have to mix in curveballs and sliders and changeups in any count, and, you know, just your typical prototypical crafty lefty, right? And they both had really good years. They were both really good finds. Fowler was undrafted, and Osterberg was a late-round pick. So those guys, for sure, I'm sure you'll see both of them in Reading next year. Rafael Marcano and Gunnar Mayer led the team in starts. He started 20 games this season. Mayer was up and down, but he definitely flashed, you know, some abilities, got a good changeup, and you can see why the Phillies took him in the fifth round a couple of years ago. You know, we talked about this on the air with him. You know, he was probably the type of pitcher that was hurt the most by the COVID year because he only pitched as a full-time pitcher 1 year in high school. So he really needed the development time. He ends up pitching 1 year in high school, which was 2018, 1 year in junior college, which was 2019. Then he got shut down for the COVID year, and then trying to build his way back up, he got hurt. And I imagine you'll see him back here at the beginning of next year, an improved version. He just needs innings. And then in Marcano's case, a 3.95 ERA. And by the end of the year, he was really good. He was the Phillies minor league pitcher of the month for August, the last full month of the season. He started a playoff game for Jersey Shore, and I think you know, he was definitely improved from the Rafael Marcano that we saw with the Blue Claws at the end of 2022, and he'll be in Reading, I assume, next year. Phillies made a number of additions over the years from Australia. One was a really great pickup this year, Mitch Noonborn, who made 16 appearances, started 10 games, struck out 54 batters in 42 innings, Tony, and only gave up 26 hits. He throws that split changeup, and what a pickup. A guy who this time last year was working a 9-to-5 job in Adelaide, Australia, getting ready for the 2022-23 Adelaide Giants season and the World Baseball Classic. He's a member of Team Australia. Both of those were successes, and his season with the Blue Claws, I think, a smashing success. One of the better success stories of the whole team, I think.
He made it up to – we're talking Noonborn, right?
Yeah, he'll go to the Arizona Fall League. And
did he make a Triple-A start?
No, that was McGowan.
That was McGowan, right. Okay.
We'll get to him in a minute. But, yeah, Noonborn really fun to watch with that changeup. If he puts it in the zone, you know, nobody was hitting it. And he had those back-to-back. His last two starts in Lakewood were 5 no-hit innings. Struck out 9 in one, struck out 10 in the other. Can't beat that.
Yeah, if only the playoffs more playoff games would have been here.
Yeah.
But he pitched very well in this ballpark.
Yeah, he'll be in the Arizona Fall League with Christian McGowan, who we wouldn't have expected to see with the Blue Claws this year if you asked us on opening day last year, because he was on the Blue Claws opening day roster in 2022, but had Tommy John surgery, got hurt on Easter Sunday in Brooklyn, and had to have TJ surgery. Came back, made five starts with the Blue Claws. He gave up four runs in one inning in his first start and one run in 15 innings after that, and then pitched great in a playoff game. He got the Triple-A at the end of the year for one start with Lehigh Valley, and he'll go to the Arizona Fall League. And he might be a guy that, you know, if you're following the Phillies minor league system, you'll kind of generally top end. You might not be that familiar with, but he's definitely a name you should
keep
get familiar with.
Yeah.
Sam Aldegary made four starts with the Blue Claws at the end of the year. Unfortunately, didn't get into a postseason game. Pitched pretty well. He also got knocked around in his Blue Claws debut and settled in after that. A lefty from Verona, Italy, who really hadn't pitched that much because of injury the previous 2 years. So he was excellent with Clearwater this season. Got himself promoted to Jersey Shore, and he will be back, I assume, next year. But, you know, he had pitched 21 innings in 2021 and only 12 innings in 2022. So he threw 83 innings this season between the two spots. Phillies were careful with him at the end of the year. Blue Claws probably could have used him at the end of the year, but it didn't work out. He'll be back next year. And, you know, he's a name to keep an eye on. You know, obviously you don't see too many from Italy. But he's back there, can go watch a soccer now for a few months and then come back stateside. What did you think of him?
I liked him. I mean, I thought, you know, after that one shaky start, he pitched very well, very dependable. And they missed him in the playoffs. They certainly could have used him in the postseason.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if they would have had him pitch the game Marcano pitched on
the last game.
The last game of the postseason, or the last game of the regular season either. Because remember, they had the bullpen game, that game on September 10th. So I don't know when he would have pitched, but yes, they definitely could have used him. The bullpen was very effective for Jersey Shore for most of the season, and we'll just kind of bounce around with them. I guess we'll start with the two big guys, Tommy McCollum and Orion Kerkering. Kerkering was the Paul Owens Award winner on the pitcher side, Johan Rojas on the hitter side. That's for the Phillies Minor League Player of the Year, and he had a great year. He was one of the rare guys, Tony, that pitched at all four levels in one season, and not just as a guy bouncing around. You know, he started in Clearwater, earned a promotion, earned another promotion, and then finished in Lehigh Valley, where he threw a scoreless inning the other night, and he'll, I'm sure, pitch one more time for them this weekend, their final weekend of the season. But a great year, all combined between all four levels. He struck out 79 batters in 53 innings. With the Blue Claws, he struck out 27 in 20 and a third. And, you know, it didn't take long, really, to see. You know, we had heard some things about him from his time in Clearwater that, you know, you gotta watch him. He's electric, and it didn't take long to see that.
Yeah, he's a guy that you figure is going to be in the Phillies bullpen at some point next season. There was some talk that they might bring him up down the stretch this year. Probably not going to happen, but
I don't think so at this
point.
Right,
at this point. But next year, certainly a player to consider for that Philadelphia bullpen in 2024.
We had Travis Hergert, the Phillies pitching coordinator, on this podcast a couple of weeks ago. I asked him about the baseballs, because they use the major league balls in AAA, and he said it's substantially different. And he wants to make sure that guys get a decent amount of time there, at least a little bit of time, working with those baseballs. So I think that's a big deal for Kerkering to get there at the end of this season, to get a couple of games of those AAA baseball, or the Major League Baseballs in AAA, because you never know what will happen. I agree with you. He'll definitely be in the Phillies bullpen at some point next year. How early? You know, that's up to him, I guess. We'll find out. But that's certainly noteworthy for him. And then Tommy McCollum, who was a non-drafted free agent a couple of years ago out of a Division II school in North Carolina, Wingate. He would have been with the Blue Claws last year, but he broke his leg fielding a ground ball with Clearwater in June and missed the rest of the season. And then he came up this year from the beginning and was really outstanding. Seven saves, struck out 56 batters in 35 innings, and only gave up 17 hits. He did walk 23. He goes to Reading, where he finished up the season, and he'll be there or Lehigh at some point next year. It was another great scouting find by the Phillies. And then, you know, just some other guys that, you know, that earned promotions during the year. Jordy Martinez, a lefty who they converted to the bullpen from the starting rotation last year. He's going to go to the Arizona Fall League. He struck out 59 guys in 47 and two-thirds innings this season. And then some guys they brought up in the middle of the year, Wesley Moore, Jack Dallas, who are fantastic. Moore, unfortunately, hurt his back, missed the last week of the season. They could have used him.
That was another guy.
In the postseason, yeah. But you know, he had a 1.91 ERA with the Blue Claws and gave up two earned runs with Clearwater in 2 months before getting promoted. Jack Dallas pitched three perfect innings in that playoff game. He had a 2.80 ERA with the Blue Claws. I mean, these are just tremendous scouting finds by
Andrew Walling,
by the Phillies. And Andrew Walling, yeah, another one, who struck out 27 batters in 16 and two-thirds innings with Jersey Shore. And lefties against Walling this year were something like 5 for 59 with 30 strikeouts between Clearwater and Lakewood.
Yeah, the bullpen was a big spark for the Blue Claws, except for those two games there against Aberdeen late in the season. Otherwise, yeah, the bullpen really helped carry this team to the postseason.
Absolutely. I mean, from July 21st on, they had the best bullpen ERA in minor league baseball for much of that run. Mm-hmm. They blew that. They had a couple bad outings, but they still had fourth or fifth by the end. And really good. A couple other guys just to note, you know, Cam Wynn had a really quiet year and a great year. 2.55 ERA, 39 strikeouts in 42 and a third innings, only gave up 29 hits. And, you know, for a guy that spent some time on the development list earlier in the year, but a sneaky good year for him. And, you know, he's a big, tall guy, throws hard. There's some projection involved, but, you know, keep an eye on a guy like him. Any other guys that we didn't touch on? Andrick Nava, two appearances, no earned runs in an inning and a third. He's a catcher.
Yeah.
Jason Ruffcorn and Matt Russell had solid seasons. Both contributed out of the pen. Ruffcorn, three innings, no earned runs in the playoff clincher back on September the 10th against Hudson Valley. Connor Ash, a guy that you could see back here next year, struck out 37 batters in 23 innings for the Blue Claws out of the bullpen after he got here from Clearwater in the early part of July. So that's your pitching rundown.
Greg, let's take a quick look at some of the Clearwater players who may or may not be here next year. I'll just do some of the big names, starting with Aiden Miller, who is the Phillies' top pick this year, a young slugger, 19 years old. Opening day next year, he'll be 20 in June. Played all of 20 minor league games this year between Clearwater and the Florida Complex League in the FCO.
Plus the playoffs, yeah.
Right, where he had a big home run.
Yeah.
In the FCO, he had 4.14. Clearwater, 10 games at 2.16. Went 8 for 37.
He'll be on the Justin Crawford track, starting Clearwater,
right,
and then
hopefully
come here mid-year
some point. Two catchers I want to mention: Jordan Disson, 21 years old, played in 65 games this year. I mean, Vandrick Nava's got to be here. Somebody's got to back him up. 65 games, 252, four homers, 35 ribbies, and another.
He's from right around here, by the way. He's from Feasterville, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, he's from the Philadelphia area. Catcher Ryan Leach, 22 years old, 45 games, 247, seven homers, 23 runs batted, and he could be here at some point. Let's jump right to Marion Boyd, the Phillies' number 12 prospect. I think I mentioned Miller. Aiden Miller's number four. Boyd, who is a semi-clone of Justin Crawford. He'll be 20 years old on opening day. 91 games for Clearwater, 262, a homer, 36 runs batted in. Speed, his big asset, 56 steals. He was caught 18 times. And I got to think after that year he starts here.
Oh, yeah.
Next year with Crawford in the outfield.
Yeah. Maybe we can all stage an in-game promotion, the two of them in, like, the 50-yard dash or something.
Another promising outfielder, number 22 prospect. Noticed him earlier in the season at the lower levels, Raylan Heredia. He'll be 20 years old on opening day. Played 18 games with Clearwater, 288, a homer, and 9 ribbies, and 4 steals in the Florida Complex League, 326, 4 homers, 25 runs batted in. I think he probably starts in Clearwater next year.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah. And anybody else? Oh, yeah, here's the number 10 prospect. Don't think he'll be here to start next year, but William Bergola. He'll be 19 years old on opening day, so he'll start in Clearwater. 55 games, though, this past year with Clearwater, 255. And definitely a top prospect, but probably won't be here, certainly not early next year, and maybe leader on, though he is a shortstop. So, and that right now yeah, we got that fill that at the moment. We'll see what happens.
We should note Clearwater. They had a great year. They won the first half with the best record in professional baseball. The Blue Claws might have taken one too many guys for them. They ended up losing in a decisive Game 3 of the Florida State League Championship Series. But congrats to them and their manager, Marty Malloy. They had a magnificent season. A
couple of players to watch. Number 23 prospect in catcher Eduardo Tait. I know the Phillies think very highly of him. He'll be 17 years old on opening day, so he'll probably be another year in the Dominican Summer League, where this year...
He'll be in the FCL.
The FCL, okay. 44 games in his first professional season, 333, three homers, 36 runs batted in again. He'll be 17 on opening day, just a name to keep your eye on. A fascinating name to watch is Dakota Katowski, and he'll be 24 years old on opening day. He's a college player, played in the FCL this year. Led the Florida Complex League with 15 home runs. Really never got a promotion to Clearwater at the end of the season. He's an outfielder, I think, or a first baseman. And, you know, he's got some pop. Be interesting to see where he starts next season. An older player, so you know, maybe he comes here, but certainly is going to be in Clearwater. If not here, he'll be in Clearwater to begin the season.
Phillies will have a bunch of players in the Arizona Fall League. Eight of them played for the Blue Claws, plus manager Marty Malloy, who will manage the Scottsdale Scorpions. That's a good team for Marty to manage. So here are the Phillies guys. Andrew Baker, a pitcher who's here in 2022. Jordy Martinez, who was here in 2023. Christian McGowan, also this year. Mitch Noonborn from this year. And Dominic Pipkin from 2019, 2021, and 2022. And then catcher Caleb Ricketts will be there. Matt Kroon, who was here in 2019 and rehabbed here this year, he'll be there, as well as Phillies, as Oliver Dunn, an infielder who was kind of a utility guy with Double-A Reading this season, and then Gabriel Rincones Jr. in the outfield. He will go as well and play for Scottsdale.
Greg, wrapping up the Sally League season, Greenville won the overall championship. They won the first half in the Southern Division. In the second half, they finished 17 games behind Hickory.
Amazing.
Which won 43 games. Greenville won 27. Greenville lost their final six games of the regular season. Hickory won their final six games of the regular season. So Greenville then goes on and beats Hickory in the postseason, and then beats Hudson Valley as well in two straight to win the Sally League championship. That's the Red Sox affiliate, their second title since 2017.
They went 4-0 in the playoffs and got beat by 17 games in the
second half.
Pretty incredible, but congratulations to them. Yep. I don't know if you saw this. They tweeted out a picture of their championship ring the morning after the game,
right,
which means they got it designed before they won. Which you would think would violate all kinds of bad karma.
Right.
But apparently not.
It worked.
If we were hoping to see the Blue Claws and Greenville in the championship series for the third time.
Right.
Of course, Blue Claws beat them in 2009 and 2010. But in four games each time. But you know, obviously, it wasn't meant to be. Anything to add, Tony, as we wrap this up?
It was a great season, you know, punctuated by some, at the very end, some exhilarating wins. Yeah, high drama covers it. Exhilarating wins, gut-wrenching losses, and it all worked out as far as the postseason goes. It was a memorable season with certainly some big moments. Again, it was great to work with you and great with Bull and his staff, and the players were so accommodating. It was just a very, very enjoyable season, and it's only how many days till opening day in 2024, Greg?
28 weeks from the moment that we 28 weeks from today, I know that. So whatever, I guess we'll do the math. I counted the weeks this morning. 196.
There you go.
Days to go, which is pretty crazy when you think about it, but yep. That's what it is, so we'll be here April 5th against Greenville, Blue Claws and the April 5th against Aberdeen, Blue Claws and the Ironbirds, to open up 2024.
How many winter coats do you think I'll be wearing?
Well, let's just say that the game time temperatures for the first four games of last year were 74, 85, 86, and 89. So I'm going to guess that, speaking of karma, hope the temperatures for the first three games of next year will be something like 41, 45, yeah. And because it's a 105 game on Sunday, 49. It'll be cold, but that's all right. Baseball will be back. What did Rogers Hornsby say? They asked him what he did all winter, and he said he stared out the window and waited for spring.
There you go.
That's what Tony and I will now do. But now we'll have more of these podcasts, and we'll get a couple of the guys on. We're going to check in. Last year, the guys in Arizona were really helpful, and we'll try to get somebody from out there to come on. We never had Gabriel Rincones or Caleb Ricketts on Hook, Line, and Splitter, so maybe we'll try to get them while they're out there in the AFL. So we'll do that for you and keep it right here. BlueClaws.com will have news updates and all that stuff. So we'll be back soon. But today we say goodbye for 2023. Tony, thank you again for everything. It was a lot of fun today.
Always.
Tony's got to get to a car appointment, and I got a meeting. So we say goodbye. All right. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Hook, Line, and Splitter presented by Judd Shaw.